Aha. Let's try this again. Yay. Third time is a charm. So, as I said earlier, Jack asked me to talk about metta and mudita. And as most of you know, metta is a word meaning loving kindness, which is a wonderful practice. And I'll talk a little bit about that and my experience with metta. And the mudita is a Pali Sanskrit word that means joy and taking pleasure in someone else's good fortune, which only brings us more joy. And I think sometimes that's a hard lesson to learn, that we can gain joy from someone else's good fortune. I started sitting in 1970, and my practice wasn't Vipassana at the time, insight meditation. In fact, I didn't even know about it. It was more of a out of body than it was an in the body kind of experience. But it was a way in, so that was the beginning. And I think it was probably 1990 that I finally discovered insight meditation and started sitting and coming to Spirit Rock. And I'd say that that practice literally saved my life, and still does to this day. But as my marriage started getting rockier and rockier, my practice started getting stronger and stronger. And so, I eventually ended up in divorce practice, but anyway, so about that time, before the divorce practice, I really had a lot of hope. I thought maybe Jack could save us. And we went to his home for some counseling. And my husband at the time, flat out said he didn't want to try. So that sort of ended that. And I continued to talk to Jack on an ongoing basis. And one day he suggested that we do some visualization because I had to move out of my home, unfortunately. And so he wanted me to ride on a carpet, across Marin to find out where I was going to live. So we did this visualization together, which really was fabulous. I mean, it was a great experience. And it kind of took me back to the out-of-the-body meditation days. But it was very enlightening. So at the end of that session, he said, "Now, for the next 6 months, I want you to practice loving kindness, metta." And I, of course, had heard of metta, and I knew that it was loving kindness, but I didn't really understand the significance of wishing other people well and healthy and living a life of ease and freedom would change my life. I didn't see it at the time. So as time has gone on, and of course, 6 months, what is that? But as time went on, I learned to understand what it meant to practice loving kindness more and more. And I guess one of the, well, first of all, practicing for yourself is difficult, and it can be difficult because sometimes we don't think we deserve loving kindness. We don't think we deserve to love ourselves, especially when someone else decides to stop loving you. And so you kind of think, what do I deserve? How do I go about cultivating this practice, not just for the benefit of others, but for the benefit of myself? So I did discover in the long run that as I practiced the phrases and the metta prayers for other people, I received more and more healing. Now, the tricky part about that was these people didn't know that I was saying metta prayers for them. They had no idea. They were halfway across the world. But I knew. So it changed me. And I actually believe that when we do say metta phrases for people or all beings, that it really makes a difference. It really changes their lives, really changes who they are. I truly believe that. course, I did Metta for Bush, and I'm not sure. I don't know how that worked. But I did say those prayers. So, as you know, Metta and Mudita are two of the Brahma Viharas, which are also known as the divine or sacred abodes. Compassion is the second one, and equanimity is the fourth. And they all relate to each other. They all play a role in the manifestation of the others. And we need them. We need all four of them. And, you know, you can't have compassion without loving kindness. It doesn't work that way. So it's important, very much so, to keep in mind that we're not just practicing loving kindness, but that it opens the door to the other three. So to start off with this, I'd like to share a quote that I just found the other day. I've been having Facebook with the Dalai Lama. I guess I'm not the only one. I think I saw a hand over here. Okay. But anyway, I received this through Facebook just the other day. One great question underlies our experience. Whether we think about it or not, what is the purpose of life? From the moment of birth, every human being wants happiness and does not want suffering. Neither social conditioning, nor education, nor ideology affects this. From the very core of our being, we simply desire contentment. Therefore, it is important to discover what will bring about the greatest degree of happiness. His Holiness the Dalai Lama. So what does bring the greatest degree of happiness in our lives? And, you know, none of us want to suffer, and we've been promised already by the Buddha that there is an end to suffering and that there is a path to the end of suffering. So we know that to be true. But we often find ourselves coming back around to this discomfort or dis-ease in our lives, sometimes caused by forces outside of ourselves, sometimes caused by our own deeds or our own speech. Our own practice. And that's why right speech is so important, and that's why right livelihood is so important to engage in, because it helps to bring about this sense of happiness and contentment. But the Buddha also gave us the Brahma Viharas and the Metta Sutta, which helps us to start this path, to walk this path of happiness and contentment through loving kindness. So the greatest degree of happiness comes to us when we engage in love and joy with others and ourselves. Alan Watts has said that it is the us, not the I, that brings about our joy. And I am just, you know, I first started learning about Alan Watts, late 60s, but it's lately that I'm really getting a sense of how his teachings, his broad experience, his worldly knowledge affects my life. So I agree with him. And that it isn't about the I, it's about the vastness of the current, of the union, of the water that we all engage in together. My daughter, Rena Marie, got married on January 2nd. I'm so delighted. Took her forever to find the right guy. And he is really a sweetheart. So I'm happy for them both. But I've mostly been happy for her to start with. You know, I kind of forgot about him. I mean, I love him. And he is the son I never had. I will admit that. But I was so happy for my daughter. And so since the wedding, January 2nd, I haven't even seen him yet. I see her all the time because I want this mother-daughter time. I want to live vicariously through this wonderful experience that she has. So one day I called her up and I said, why don't you have Daryl call me? Because I haven't checked in with him since the wedding. So he calls me up and I said, Daryl, how's married life? He said, it's wonderful. And, you know, a lot of men don't know that you don't lose your freedom just because you get married. It gets greater and it's better and you learn ways to work out difficulties. And he's giving me this speech on, you know, on marriage from a male perspective and how lucky he is. And while he's talking, I can hear the smile in his voice. He is smiling while he's talking. You know how you can hear that on the phone. And I can hear this in his conversation, and I am just delighted because I had been happy for my daughter, but it didn't occur to me to be happy for him that he got my daughter and that they're happy together. So I called her back, and I said, Rena, you should have heard Daryl smiling on the phone. And then she giggled. She giggled from her own joy and her own delight. And that's when I realized I was a part of something. And I wasn't sure if I could tell this story because, you know, it makes me want to cry. That it's not just that my daughter got married and she's happy, but that this is the current that Alan Watts talked about, to engage in that relationship with others and to find joy there and to offer joy and appreciation. And it's all about gratitude, and it's all about generosity. And so this is my experience now with them. And now they want to have children. I'm all for that. In fact, I gave my daughter my rocking chair that I bought when I was pregnant with her, and I can't wait to rock my first grandchild in that chair. But again, I'm a little cold, so if I seem like I'm shivering, I am. Anyway, so... So, this will work. So, metta or loving kindness is something that Sharon Salzberg made really famous, you know, with her books and her teachings. And in one of her books, she calls loving kindness the revolutionary act of happiness. That fits, because it is indeed revolutionary. It is that kind of experience that we share with ourselves and we share with others. So we're cultivating this. We're cultivating the metta prayer and the metta phrases. And I know that many of you are familiar with these phrases because we use them here at Spirit Rock. And I think one that's probably most common is, may all beings be peaceful. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe and protected from inner and outer harm. May all beings live a life of ease. And may all beings be free. Now, I have said this for myself, and I've said it for other people. And like I said, I said it for George Bush. Because I figured he was sort of a difficult personality and needed a little bit of help. But there are other phrases, and of course, we can make up our own. We can cultivate our own phrases, which I'm sure that you do. And I found a metta prayer that's very beautiful, and it's from The Awakening of the Buddha Within. Some of you may be familiar with this book. And this metta phrase says, may all beings be happy, content, and fulfilled. May all beings be healed and whole. May all have whatever they want and need. May all be protected from harm and free from fear. May all beings enjoy inner peace and ease. May all be awakened, liberated, and free. May there be peace in the world and throughout the entire universe. So, during the winter, when it's cold outside, and all of the nocturnal animals are cold in the evening, although they're used to being cold, I guess, it's really great to remember to say metta for these creatures. Thank you so much. Someone offered me tea, and I said no. I guess I needed it. it's important to say it for each other. It's important to say it for the trees. It's important to say it for the animals. It's important to say it for our children. As I raised my daughter, I had a strong sense of joy, sympathetic joy about her life and in her life. And now I have it for my daughter and her husband. And it's one of those things I think that parents always know, that as you're raising your children, that you are raising them with love and joy. And the two work so well together, hand in hand. No, I'm fine, thanks. Oh, load it on. I'll break out in a sweat pretty soon. So anyway, like I said earlier, saying metaphrases can be difficult for ourselves individually. But that doesn't mean that it's not difficult for our entire families and our neighborhoods and the world and our president and all of the situations that we're faced with today, Afghanistan, Uganda, Haiti, Chile. All over the world, there are issues and things that come to us that we don't really want to think about that often because they're so painful and there's so much suffering attached to those issues. But it's loving kindness that really saves us because it offers something healing to these communities and these nations of people, but also offers healing and compassion for ourselves. Here it comes. This is pretty good. I like this one. I might take it home. Yeah. So, mudita. Mudita is the opposite of jealousy. Mudita is the opposite of envy. And it's so easy when someone has something to celebrate, some wonderful fortune, to wish that it was your own. That's a very easy thing to do. But there is no healing. There is no love. There is no joy in that. In fact, what do we get from that kind of practice? We get suffering. So when we have those feelings, the one thing that we don't want is suffering, but that is the one thing that we get from not celebrating someone else's good fortune. So, mudita means joy. And it gives us the opportunity to send best wishes to others. Now, there may not be phrases to go along with mudita like there is with metta, but it does give us a chance to take it into our practice as a meditation, to actually think. If you have an altar, if you have a place where you sit all the time, where you meditate, time of day, whatever that may be, that is the greatest time to think about the joy of another person and celebrate it in that moment during that meditation. So many of us, you know, think about winning the lottery or, you know, winning a car. You know, at shopping malls, they have these forms you can fill out. They have a car outside. You know, you fill out the form and you win a car. Of course, that's inviting a lot of headache to fill out those forms. I found that out the wrong way, the hard way. But anyway, that's not what mudita is about. That's not really what it's about. It's about coming to terms with the peace that lies within ourselves, something that we can cultivate on a regular basis, day in and day out, so that when the moment arises where a friend or a family member or someone that you don't even know announces the good fortune of life, of peace, of a home, a roof over their heads, whatever the case may be, you are ready on the spot because you are in practice. You are practicing sympathetic joy in a way where you can call upon it whenever you need it. It's right there. And it's sincere, it's honest, you mean it. And you can take on that practice and with all sincerity and offer someone your joy for their experience. So, the practice of mudita is taking great joy in the happiness of others. And it benefits us as much as it benefits someone else because we get that warm glow, we get that satisfaction. we get that feeling of peace and happiness, very similar to what we get from metta. And that's why the two work so well together. There is another resource that I found on Mudita that I thought I'd share with you. And this is special. This is special. The term mudita is usually translated as sympathetic or altruistic joy, the pleasure that comes from delighting in other people's well-being rather than begrudging it. That's why I said mudita is the opposite of jealousy. It's the complete opposite. You're not begrudging someone's good fortune. You're actually praising and praising their opportunity and their good fortune. Many Buddhist teachers interpret mudita more broadly as referring to an inner spring of infinite joy that is available to anyone at all times, regardless of circumstances. The more deeply one drinks of this spring, the more secure one becomes in one's own abundant happiness. And the easier it is, the more we relish the joy of other people as well. So it's actually a practice. We are practicing this. The traditional example of the mind state of mudita is the attitude of a parent observing a growing child's accomplishments and successes, and I mentioned that in my own life. Mudita is also traditionally regarded as the most difficult of the Brahmaviharas to cultivate. To show mudita is to celebrate happiness and achievement in others, even though we are facing tragedy ourselves. Now, I think that is really key, because all of us have circumstances in our lives that are difficult from time to time. We grieve when we lose someone. The death of someone in our lives that's important to us, a family member, or a lover, or a child, that brings on grief. And grief is so poignant that even though someone has been lost, and you may be right by their side when this happens, the poignancy of the experience is also a blessing to be able to share in that moment. So with those that are surrounding you, with those that are experiencing those losses, there's an opportunity even there for mudita, for joy, the joy and celebration of one's life, the joy and celebration of one's career at the point of retirement, the joy and celebration of one's union, as in the case of my daughter. And it's priceless. It's priceless. The Buddha's teaching of mudita is about unselfish joy. And I think that's pure. That's the pure state of joy, of being unselfish, of caring so much that we don't want to take away anything from someone else. So metta and mudita are wedded together. And that's where compassion also comes in. Compassion allows us to care enough for someone else, even when it doesn't involve good fortune, but it involves something that's painful or of need. Compassion is right in the middle. It is right there. Much needed practice. So, you know, mindfulness practice is, I guess, the basis of what we do. It's the foundation of who we are as spiritual people. And, of course, I'm sure there are other practices in the room that people engage in. But mindfulness is the root, and from that, these other practices spring. And that's why we have the Brahmaviharas that we can lean on and anticipate experiencing the joy and happiness from. Now, equanimity, I think, even though this talk isn't really about equanimity, it's an important part of this whole structure of the Brahmaviharas or the sacred abodes. It allows us to maintain balance and understanding in our practice so that nothing really gets out of whack. With metta and mudita, we can balance ourselves in our practice by using equanimity as a way to understand what it is that we're doing and what we're practicing. So what I would like to do now is, I don't know if we can pass the mic. Can we? I'd like to hear from you your experience with these two compassionate practices of metta and mudita. How do those two things come together for you? How do they enhance your life and bless who you are as a result of caring for and loving and finding joy in another person's life or in your own? Anyone want to share? Everybody's thinking. How does mudita and metta come together in your life as a practice for others and yourself or yourself? Anyone think of something? Yes?
Thank you. I was just reflecting on the joy I felt for you and your daughter. And, you know, I just met you tonight, but I was really happy for you. And I wasn't jealous of that, but I really enjoyed your happiness. So.
Thank you. And, you know, it's something that wasn't anticipated. I knew that she wanted to marry this person, and Daryl, and he's wonderful. And I knew I was going to be happy, but it never occurred to me that I would be a part of a current of energy and of water that's moving, that is dynamic, that is actually dynamic, that I can share in for the rest of my life. And that's new for me. That is very new for me. So thank you for that. I appreciate it. Yes, over here and then over here.
One of the most common ways that I see mudita happen is when other people announce a pregnancy and everybody says, oh, that's so great, I'm so happy, I'm so excited for you. But I have a son who's profoundly disabled, and so every time somebody would tell me about their pregnancy, it would bring up all this pain and sadness inside of me, and there was a part of me that would almost always want to say, you better pray that you have a normal child. And I worked really hard at that to try to transform those feelings inside of myself so that I really truly could pray for those people and you know, join them in their celebration. And so that effort changed, you know, gradually and continually changes my experience with my child, because his situation is something that will always be there. So that was a very powerful way, you know, when you were talking about if you have some tragedy or something in your own life, and how you, by that practice of mudita, you can turn that around, your own experience of it.
Yes, true. And how old is your son?
He's 12.
12, okay. Yeah, and that's such a special
age. He had a stroke in utero. So here's somebody who comes into the world with, from the before the beginning, with a very profound seemingly disability.
Yeah.
And yet also he's a very, very amazing person.
Yeah, I'm very sure of that. And we have someone right here. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait, did you want to go next? No, you didn't. Okay, over here.
I think of Greg Mortensen with the 3 cups of tea and the work that he's done in Afghanistan. And although I don't think the book is all that well written, I think the message from is so powerful in terms of he just gives of the heart. And we're so hungry for that, and that book just keeps getting read and talked about. I just heard someone mention, I don't know how long has it been around, fills the Civic Center when he comes to talk, and we're just so hungry for that message and that possibility.
Good, yes, thank you so much. Over two over here.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to give voice to a very special happening between my mother and I. And my mother was always a very religious person, and I never saw her as a very spiritual person until a couple of years before she died. And she had, in those last few years, such joy in her union with her God that I experienced so much joy in being with her. And there was always a division with us. And in those last couple of years, there was so much union. It was very beautiful.
Yeah. And that's what I meant by poignant. That we can find joy in those situations, those moments of loss, of suffering in our families, within our own lives, and our friends. That by being and joining and being in the current again allows us the opportunity to really find that kind of joy, especially if you can find the joy, their own joy, not so much ours, but to anticipate someone else's joy and derive such pleasure from that, which you did. And I'm assuming you, too, are doing with your son. I think back there and then up front. Someone had their hand up. Yeah.
I have found that in times of, pardon me? Is it okay? Is it on? Oh, closer, okay. That in times of a real difficulty with someone, to simply stand there in front of them and say, may you be happy and peaceful. May you be healthy and strong. May you be safe and protected from harm. May you be at ease in your life. Is so so diffuses a really difficult situation that it changes everything for, I think, for both people. And actually, I've watched it, the whole situation just dissolve.
Yes, it turns it around. Thank you. Okay, so we have here and then here.
Hi.
Hi, old friend.
I think that joy is contagious. It's contagious for me. And I actually last week had an experience with, I don't have my own children, but I work with kids a lot, and developed a relationship with this kid who had been a gang member and a drug dealer and had a lot of challenges in his life, and helped focus him to not go into the Marines, which is what he was going to do. And he ended up at the Maritime Academy, and I found someone to help sponsor him to go through the Maritime Academy, and he wanted to become a marine engineer. But he was really challenged in so many ways in his life. But just through supporting him every step of the way, and, well, at least, you know, monthly reports and monthly calls, and he's going to graduate in May, but he called me and he said, golly, all of a sudden, all of my classmates, like, were starting to interview for jobs, and everybody's really competitive with each other, and these people I thought were my friends aren't being very kind because of all this competition. And I just want them to get a job, and I want me to get a job. And I said, well, just keep being yourself and stay with your heart. Stay with your beautiful intentions for everybody. And so he called me on Wednesday, and he said, I have an interview tomorrow. It's the job I really want, and I'll find out on Thursday. And he called me Wednesday night, and he said, I got the job. And I like went running around my office. And, like, yelling, you know, because I was so excited. And so that, to me, there's just nothing greater than sharing in someone else's joy, especially when there's been challenge.
Yeah. So. That's a great story. Great story. I think, let's see, where was it? Over here.
So I think that when joy and loving kindness just kind of happen, as you mentioned before, spontaneously, or they're just, you don't have to really think about it. It just kind of comes out. That's such a beautiful experience. And I've noticed that after coming here for pretty regularly for about a year now, that it just happens. And it's such a beautiful growth that's happened in me. And I also want to ask you, is your daughter, Rena, is she the one who made the movie?
It is.
She's amazing. I love her. She's the most shining, bright woman, in all of San Francisco.
Thank you. All of San Francisco.
She is. She's really incredible.
Thank you.
I'd love to get in touch with her again. I knew her when I lived in the city. So.
Well, I'll give you her contact information.
Yeah, great. Okay,
thank you. Well, you know, the thing about metta and mudita is that it is a cultivation. It is something that we cultivate. And I think your experience over the last year of coming to Spirit Rock and having more and more of that kind of joy and happiness is a result of that kind of cultivation that you are experiencing in your spiritual home. And it's so easy to be sort of lost in the world and not have the kind of support that we need in order to be again in that flow, in that current, in that river with others. It's so easy to lose that sense. So it is something that requires practice and to be ready on the spot so that we're so used to that kind of feeling that when someone does share a story with you, I got the job. And you know what that joy feels like because you embody it. You know exactly what it feels like, and you have it within yourself in order to practice again and again to, as someone shared earlier, about being able to just walk up to somebody and offer metta, to be able to do that because you've cultivated the skill, and you know how to use it. And again, it turns around and it brings joy to yourself. You know, it brings joy to you. She wants to know what my daughter's film is. I can't remember the name of it. Do you? She used high school kids from Bayview Hunters Point that she had been working with as a therapist, and they all come from a variety of experiences, as you can imagine, and. What they did was they told her their stories through drama therapy in the sessions that she did with them. And as a result of acting out their stories, she took their stories and put it to a script, and they acted each other's stories, not their own. And they made a film about their difficulties. And one of the stories I remember from the film was about a young woman who was about to drop out of high school, and this is a true story. And she just decided, one more time, I'm going to give it my best. I'm going to try really hard. So she did her homework. She did her best. She turned it in, and the teacher called her to the front and said, I don't believe you did that, and tore it up and threw it away. And that was a true story. And so I asked, and this movie, it's amazing. But anyway, I asked my daughter later, is that a true story? She said, it happens all the time. Happens all the time. In public school settings especially. But it happens all the time. So that was one of the stories. And many of them dealt with physical abuse of parents. And it was very, very moving. And in fact, my daughter was in the film. And she played a parent that physically abused her child. And I came out of a situation like that as a child. And I was sitting next to my mother watching this film. And I was just, I went through this, and my daughter's acting it out. So she asked me, how did you feel about me playing that role? I said, that was really hard. That was really hard. So thank you for that. And thanks for asking. Anyone else? Yes.
Hello. Hey. I think a lot of people haven't hit on where you can practice somewhat with the most frequency, which is in your own relationship with a significant other. And often the relationship is in the moment so much that you don't reap the benefit of just true, honest kindness to someone else until after it's over. Mm. But I just broke up with my girlfriend about a week or two ago, and I don't know where I got the awareness or the skill to do it, but for some reason when I'm with people, with women, I'm able to offer very honest support without wanting anything from it, just to encourage and facilitate more energy towards whatever their endeavor is. And after a breakup, like you said, in times of strife, when my emotions are not as solid as they could be, it's interesting how much peace and happiness I can get from still seeing the fruits of that labor. You know, yeah. From still noticing that their life is still being improved from something that had no personal investment for why I would say it other than their own good, you know, good fortune. So.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Thank you. So for the last couple of minutes, join me in some intention setting before we go. Thank you for the shares. That just helped to support what I wanted to offer. Okay, so again, sitting comfortably and thinking about metta and mudita as a practice, something that we cultivate within ourselves and can share with those around us. And I will offer these phrases. I offer my time and energy to benefit all beings. May all sentient beings enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. May we be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May we be in harmony with the world around us. May we dwell in the great equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and prejudice. Thank you. So, we've come to the end of the evening. No, we haven't. I thought we had no more time. Oh, well, yeah, sorry. I thought we were done. Well, we can be. So if anyone else would like to share anything before we go, this is your last chance. And with that, I'll just mention, what am I mentioning? To turn right instead of left, which you know. Oh, and the chairs go over here in the back, and the cushions go in the corner. Thank you so much.